ARUP Institute for Learning presents Insight,
Education,
Leader,
Pain Management,
Technology,
Experiment,
Esoterization,
Informatics,
Body Research,
Excellent.
Laboratory Medicine.
Join us as we delve into emerging topics presented by ARUP medical directors who are faculty in the Department of Pathology, School of Medicine, and other highly qualified expert contributors. Interpretation of toxicology results can be difficult due to so many different factors, and unexpected results can make the process even more complicated. ARUP Technical Product Manager Golden Welch sits down with University of Utah pathology resident Dr. Maggie Hopkins and Dr. Gwen McMillan, a medical director of the Toxicology Laboratories and co-medical director of pharmacogenetics at ARUP, as well as an associate professor of pathology at the University of Utah School of Medicine, to discuss topics in toxicology and unexpected results. On today's segment, they will be discussing issues with the assays or patient metabolism.
The cases discussed here are taken from a paper in the American Journal of Clinical Pathology by Dr. Michael Ward on consultation cases. Dr. Hopkins?
The cases we'll be discussing today are patient A and patient B who are receiving medications for pain management. As part of their treatment plans, both patients have signed pain management contracts that outline regular drug testing to determine both compliance with their prescriptions and avoidance of non-prescribed and illicit drugs. During their most recent office visit, both patients were tested by a urine point-of-care device, with a urine sample also sent to reference lab for additional testing. Patient A is receiving prescriptions for Subutex, which is buprenorphine, and Valium, which is diazepam. Point-of-care testing is positive for buprenorphine, while confirmation testing is negative. Point-of-care testing is positive for benzodiazepines, and confirmation testing is negative for diazepam, but positive for nordiazepam, temazepam, and oxazepam. Patient B is receiving prescriptions for Percocet, which is oxycodone plus acetaminophen, and Clonopin, which is clonazepam. Point-of-care testing for patient B shows negative for both opiates and benzodiazepines, where confirmation testing shows the expected drugs and their metabolites.
What is compliance monitoring?
Compliance monitoring is laboratory testing for patients who are on prescription drugs that have a high potential for abuse. These patients are tested to make sure that they are complying with the prescribed drugs, actually taking them, because since the drugs have a very high street value, there is a financial incentive for them to continue to fill the prescription without taking the drug. In addition, patients are at high risk for other addictive behaviors and taking drugs which are not prescribed to them. So we test to make sure that they are not combining dangerous drugs or participating in addictive behavior with other prescription drugs or other illegal street drugs.
And who would order this type of testing? Dr. McMillan?
Patients that experience chronic non-cancer pain are likely to be managed by a wide variety of providers. There are pain management specialists, but many patients are also monitored by their general practitioner or perhaps a neurologist, anesthesiologist, an oncologist, a transplant medicine doctor, a PA. There are many different types of physicians that may be involved. Addiction management physicians and psychiatrists also get involved in monitoring and treating pain management patients.
Dr. Hopkins, the two cases that you explained, the results that were received for the testing were not as expected. What are some reasons for these unexpected results?
A common reason for results to not be expected would be actual compliance. So a discussion with the patient to get their side of the story. Are they taking the drug? Are they not taking the drugs they're not supposed to? Is the best place to start. There are some other reasons why the results may not be expected, including the quality of the sample. Is it diluted? Has it been adulterated? The timing of the sample and the metabolic profile of the patient, considering how the drug is metabolized in the body, you may actually miss the window of detection. If you have submitted the wrong specimen type for that type of testing, you may not get the best type of result. The sensitivity of the assay, understand the limitations of each of the different types of tests that you are ordering, and make sure that the test that was ordered is the most appropriate for the application that you are currently testing for.
So in the case of patient A, we had a positive screen for buprenorphine and a negative confirmation for buprenorphine. What's the reason for the difference in results?
In this case, the buprenorphine immunoassay was used for the point of care testing. Buprenorphine assay is cross-reactive to both the glucuronide metabolite and the parent drug. So this sum of the metabolite plus parent drug is contributing to the positive signal. The confirmation assay is by liquid chromatography and mass spectrometry. This separates the compounds and detects the metabolite and the parent drug as separate mass charge ratio. The amount of one compound may be below the limit of detection of the positive cutoff since they are each detected separately.
As Dr. Hopkins has suggested, the analytical methods that could be used for buprenorphine testing may be designed to look at different things. And so it is important that if one is to take the screen with reflex approach to testing, that the screen and confirmation test be aligned relative to the analytes that are detected, as well as relative to the cutoff or reporting limit of the test. So it's entirely possible that in this particular case, the buprenorphine immunoassay was more sensitive to the drug than the confirmation method, which means that the screen was actually the true positive and the confirmation was actually a false negative. But it could easily be the opposite if a screen is not sensitive or specific enough and the confirmation test is more sensitive, having lower cutoffs or including more specific analytes. So it's just very important whenever results are inconsistent with expectations that we look at the design of the analytical methods that were applied and what the alignment is when there's more than one test that's applied. In truth, we always want to give the patient the benefit of the doubt until we have researched these types of details.
And patient A was prescribed Valium or diazepam, and the POC screen, or the point of care screen, was positive for benzodiazepines. Confirmation testing shows diazepam as negative, but nordiazepam, temazepam, and oxazepam were detected. What is the explanation for this? Is the patient taking the drugs they shouldn't?
In this situation, the immunoassay cross-reacts with multiple drugs in the benzodiazepine class, including diazepam and its metabolites, which has given that positive on the screen. In the body, diazepam is metabolized to nordiazepam, temazepam, and oxazepam. So this pattern of results that's observed in patient A is consistent with diazepam ingestion. Diazepam is not detected because it has been extensively metabolized. Metabolites are more likely to be detected in the urine, and all three of the expected metabolites have been detected in the urine in this case.
So in the case of patient B, we had a negative screening result for opiates, yet the patient is taking oxycodone. Explain why this would happen.
Well, what we have here is opiates and opioids. Oxycodone actually has poor cross-reactivity with opiates. It is an opioid, and it would be very easy to make this mistake thinking that oxycodone would be picked up by an opiate screen. Follow-up testing in this case did report oxycodone, noroxycodone, oxymorphone, and noroxymorphone, which are all of the expected metabolites of oxycodone, indicating that the patient was taking the drug as prescribed.
Dr. McMillan, is there anything we can learn from this pattern of metabolites that the confirmation test detected?
Yes, actually, looking at the patterns of metabolites that are detected, as well as the proportional concentrations of those metabolites, can be very informative. For example, with the oxycodone, we know that oxycodone is metabolized to noroxycodone and oxymorphone. The oxymorphone and the noroxycodone are subsequently metabolized to noroxymorphone. So if we were to consider a result that included only the noroxymorphone as an example, that would be the terminal metabolite. That might say something about the timing of specimen collection relative to the administration of the drug. If we have all of the metabolites, then that also may tell us something about timing, meaning that the drug was probably taken more recently. Another thing we can look at is if, for example, oxymorphone was not found, but just noroxycodone was found. We know that oxymorphone is produced primarily by a metabolic enzyme known as cytochrome P450-2D6. We sometimes call this CYP2D6, and it is a common site of drug-drug interactions. So if a particular patient was taking a medication that was inhibiting the CYP2D6 enzyme, then we would expect the phenotype to represent primarily noroxycodone, and we would not expect oxymorphone in the urine. Another explanation for that could be pharmacogenetic variation of CYP2D6. We can also look at that on the flip side relative to the proportion of noroxycodone, because noroxycodone is produced primarily by a reaction mediated by cytochrome P450-3A45, which is also a common site of drug-drug interactions. So sometimes by looking at the proportions, we can learn about the timing of the specimen collection relative to drug administration, and we can also learn something about the metabolic phenotype, whether it's inherited or as a result of drug-drug interactions.
So do these same type of patterns that we saw with opiates, do they also apply to benzodiazepines?
The concept of metabolic phenotype certainly applies when you're interpreting benzodiazepine results as well. Although in some ways it's a bit more complicated when we consider diazepam, which, as Dr. Hopkins said, is metabolized to nordiazepam. Nordiazepam is metabolized to oxazepam, and temazepam is metabolized to oxazepam. So when we have the triad of those three metabolites, we can be pretty confident that the patient took diazepam. But let's say all we had was temazepam and oxazepam. Then we wouldn't be certain whether the patient took Valium or Restoril, for example. One of the other concerns that might have evolved is if we only saw diazepam. If we only saw diazepam, that would be suggestive that a patient may have actually added drug directly to the urine after voiding to mimic compliance. So these are all important interpretive aspects of looking at the patterns and the actual proportional concentrations of parent drug and drug metabolites.
On the next segment.
A common question that I get on the Path On Call service is for a patient taking oxycodone, and oxycodone plus metabolites are present, but there's also a small positive for hydrocodone. This can indicate an impurity in the manufacturing process rather than the patient surreptitiously taking a drug which they are not supposed to.